are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
You would be, and it's show 209, the first show of our fifth year on the air.
Fifth year?
Yeah.
5 years.
Yeah.
And it seems like only yesterday.
Yeah.
You know?
It does.
It's a magical feeling, isn't it?
Yes.
I'm all a tither.
Me
I'm
too.
All a tither.
Let's get on with
it. I'm sitting here beside myself.
You are. You know? That's hard to do. No, and it's also, you know what? It's also the birthday of somebody that's a very famous actor on this day.
Who?
Yeah. Yeah. You know who? He used to front a band called the Funky Bunch.
Okay.
But his name was in front of it. I think somebody knows here. Chris,
what?
Do you know?
I would say that would be Mark Wahlberg.
You would be correct.
Mark Wahlberg.
Yes. As he likes to be called today.
Yes.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, because it was Marky Mark in the Funky
That's right.
Bunch. That's right.
43 years old today. So happy birthday, Mark.
Oh, okay. Let's throw some applause. Let's throw some applause.
There you go. How are you, sir?
I am good. How are you?
I am very well. We'll talk about that in a second.
All right.
First, let's get to our business at hand. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. And to learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
And as you know, Paul, we have
two guests in one. Yes.
Two super talented gentlemen with us today, both very musical. One is a revered Broadway star who's currently headlining the McCoy Rigby regional premiere production of Les Miserables at the La Mirada Theater for the Performing Arts in La Mirada, California. The extraordinary James Barber is with us.
Barber.
Hello, James.
Hi.
How are
Welcome.
You, sir?
Can I have that follow me everywhere?
You may.
Hey, you brought them. That's all I'm saying.
I did, you know, all three of them. Well, they have three hands.
But they're enthusiastic. That's
they
the important part.
And they stop right on cue.
They do. I have to find a new one. On the other side of the classics, like Les Mis, our second guest today is getting ready to burn it up again next week at Rockwell Table and Stage in the Los Feliz area of Los Angeles with a hot project entitled A Little New Music. Say hello to Christopher Makish.
You
got
that
right?
Christopher? That's right.
Correct.
Get it right. Good.
Because it could have been like Mai Tai, you know, so...
Yeah, Mai Tai, Mai Kish, you know.
Yeah.
It's Austrian.
Is that it?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
You should run for governor.
But before we talk to Chris and our other guest, let me ask you.
Yes.
How was your week?
Very good. Very good. Got a couple of two more festival acceptances for The Beating, this short film that I did. Can't reveal them yet because they ask us to hold off until they actually do the formal announcement, but very exciting. So I'll be doing a little traveling and going to miss a couple of shows, unfortunately.
Really?
But, I know you're heartbroken over that.
Well,
forced
not
to take
necessarily.
Some time off.
We might ask one of these gentlemen to come in and host for you.
Yeah. But no, going good. Keeping busy. Going good. How about you, Michael? Were you been busy?
Busy getting ready for our 8-year anniversary at Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal, which is a supper club that I produce in the NoHo Arts District. Right, you know where it is, right?
I do, yeah.
Have you been?
I have not.
Well, you should come.
All right.
We'd love to have you.
I'll come.
And Chris, you need to come too.
Absolutely.
Yes, Chris has actually headlined for me before.
Oh, have you really?
Yeah, he's co-headlined with
At Vitello's or the Federal?
At Vitello's.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So how long has it been just at the Federal now?
2.5 years.
2.5 years.
Yeah.
Wow, that's unbelievable.
But the other 6.5 over at Vitello's in Studio City there. So we're prepping for that. Big, big show.
You got
on,
too big.
Monday.
You got too big for him, mister. You got too big for Vitello's. That's the thing.
That's what happened.
You just busted at the seams of that place. You needed a loft. You had a supper club. You needed a loft. You got a loft. Beautiful thing.
And we do. It's actually very
It's a great
cool.
space.
Yes. Thank you, Paul. Mm-hmm. Thank you. So that in, what was at the Pantages Theater last night for the opening of Joseph... the U.S. National Tour of Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. We'll talk about that in the arts calendar, but that was great fun, and I was there working for Broadway World TV. So,
yeah,
which is where James and I first met.
I loved Joseph first time I saw. I saw it on Broadway when it came out because I was, you know, when I was two, and but I didn't realize until after I saw it that was their first, that Rice and Weber. was their first piece that they wrote it as like this boys' school pageant or something.
Yes, exactly.
They were like 16 or 17 when they were, but you know, unbelievable.
And then it started actually at the Ford Theater in Washington.
Yeah. And then they revisited it on the success. They sort of put it away, and then with the success of Jesus Christ Superstar, they sort of dug it up and expanded on it. And, you know, very, very light, but great
quite
songs.
Sustains quite a following, I might add.
It does.
Well, you could bring anyone to it, too.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. But, it was a beautiful evening with that show, and I was talking. The lovely thing is the stars of the show are two American Idol former contestants, Ace Young and his wife, Diana DeCarmo.
Wow.
He proposed to her on May 23rd on Idol, and then they got married a year ago, just had their one-year anniversary on June 1st. So,
Did you interview them for Broadway World?
Yes, I did. They came out actually before anybody was arriving to do the interview, so it was very nice of them to do that. And, she is something else on the stage.
Really?
And
does she play Potiphar's wife?
No. She's the narrator.
Oh, she's the narrator?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, of course. It's the Laurie Beachman role.
Yes, singing her heart out for 2.5 hours there.
Wow.
But other than that, all is good, so thanks for asking.
All right, cool. Yeah. Let's talk to these two gentlemen we have
Absolutely.
With us, Michael. You want to give them their due?
I will.
Start with James.
Indeed. Our first guest, ladies and gentlemen, was nominated for the Drama Desk, Drama League, and Outer Critics Awards for Best Actor in a Musical for his portrayal of Sidney Carton in the Broadway musical version of A Tale of Two Cities. He has starred on Broadway in such Tony Award-winning shows as Stephen Sondheim's Assassins, Disney's Beauty and the Beast as The Beast, Carousel as Billy Bigelow, You're in Town as Officer Lockstock, and as Edward Rochester in Jane Eyre, which earned him a Drama League Award nomination. He also appeared in the Broadway production of Cyrano and the national tour of The Secret Garden. His screen credits range from TV's The District, Just Shoot Me, Sex and the City, Some Enchanted Evening, celebrating Oscar Hammerstein, that was a PBS production, to Adam Sandler's 8 Crazy Nights, Waiting for Lefty, and The Telltale Heart. He is a true force of nature. Please welcome the very gifted James Barber. A little rock and roll.
Like that.
Yes.
I want that to follow me everywhere.
And we're not going to hold it against him that he is also a friend of Ted Koch's, which is a mutual friend
Don't
that we have.
Tell him.
And we were talking about it before in the green room that Ted Koch, also a very, very gifted actor and a friend of mine. And, just a funny fellow. We sent him
a little photo.
A little photo.
Yeah.
A little moderately profane photo.
Yes,
before we got started.
as would be the case. As is often the case.
James, have you performed with McCoy Rigby before? This is your first time out there?
No, I did. They did a tour of Camelot. It was Michael York, Rachel York, and myself. I did Lancelot with them. And we started at the La Mirada Theater, and I did 6 months on a tour with them, and then I ended up leaving to go do Tale of Two Cities. So, it's my second time. I love them. It's like a family down there.
That's the reason
very,
I asked, because
nice
everyone who's worked there, we've had a number of people on the show that have done shows down there, and that's always the first thing that people say, just much like 3D theatricals when they talk about that, a very familial group.
And you know what's amazing about them is that they are now, when we look at San Diego, we look at the Old Globe, we look at La Jolla, maybe Fifth Avenue up in Seattle. These guys are now, I think, becoming the place for Broadway shows to come and try out. In fact, they're going to do Pride and Prejudice. It's an amazing space. And we have an amazing theater community here in LA. So I really love
how
it.
How big is that house, actually?
It's like 1,200, 1,300 seats.
It's kind of a great size to
see. It's a great size,
It's similar to the Carpenter Center down in Long Beach. There's 1,100 seats there, which is a...
And that's, That's a good size venue.
Yeah.
I mean, and for them to get the following that they do, and I always get their promotional material, I get their calendars and everything, and it's a class act across the board.
Mm-hmm.
Really great stuff there. Yeah. Had you done anything in Les Mis before? Is this
no,
the first?
No, never. It's funny. I was talking to Mark Kudish about it. I think he and I were the only people ever not to do the men to do Les Mis in our entire careers. We're both in our mid late 40s. I hadn't. My first major audition was for Les Mis in New York. I remember standing in line. It was like 6 o'clock in the morning, freezing my butt off, and I get in for this open call, and it was ended up for Grantaire and Javert and Richard J. Alexander, the great Richard J., who's now a friend of mine, and the late Vinnie Lift looked at me and he says, "Do you think of yourself as a Grantaire?" I'm like, "No, I'm more of an Enjolras right now." And Vinnie Lift literally slammed his head on the table because he's like, "What are you doing? You have the role." And it went to my buddy Stephen Bishop. He got the tour. But I'd never done the show, ever. And so we had, you know, I learned Jean Valjean in less than 2 weeks.
Well, you know, I must say to your credit that a fellow colleague of mine, a critic, who went to opening night, and I apologize for not being there because I was scheduled to go there, and I'm going to just have to catch another performance on. He said, I've seen the show 11 times. You know, I've reviewed the show 11 times, but I have never heard it sung like it was sung.
Oh, it's very kind.
At La Mirada.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You don't want to share who that reviewer is, or is it?
Yeah, no. Okay. Yeah, it was just a kind of personal.
I think I know. It was my mom because she's dead.
I think I know.
But that's a nice compliment. I mean, you know, it's a beautiful show to be sung well.
So well, and also, yeah, to get that comment about one of the most difficult. I mean, did you find that to be the case? You said you learned it in 2 weeks, but obviously you were familiar with it.
I was familiar. It, you know, ironically enough, because I started out as a baritone. Everybody's like, you're Javert. So I had the Javert music in my head. Right. And there's, you know, the score is not, it's diverse, but it's not diverse. You know, like, you know, Javert's music is the same as Valjean's music.
Right.
The lyrics are different. So when I first was drilling it with myself, I would find myself singing Valjean, but then skipping into the Javert lyrics. It was more about placement. Ironically enough, because I'm pushing out so much air, and when you sing really, really high, which Valjean does, I'm now singing up into C's in the C range, which is like freaking high tenor stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm blowing out so much air in such a small area that I create that I actually get dizzy at 3 points in the show at the end of the first act, bring him home.
Yeah.
And at the end of the second act. And I'm like, whoa. So, it's a challenge, but I absolutely love it. Absolutely love it.
But, I mean, it would be, I mean, even without the vocal gymnastics, it would be a challenge. I mean, it's a physically challenging role.
Yeah, that's interesting, too, because, like, for example, Jane Eyre, I had 12 songs in Jane Eyre. I hardly, you know, Marla Chappell, who played Jane, was on the stage. I was probably on the stage for maybe an hour and 40 minutes. Tale of Two Cities, I was on the stage for almost 2 hours. So I do those kind of, I call them DBGs, the dark brooding guys. I do those guys. What's hard for me is where my body, I literally am like doing all this core strengthening when I'm singing because I'm trying to push out so much air. So that's the issue. And then I emailed John Caird, who co-directed the original production, to get a timeline. And he said, well, look, you know, when you carry, he's basically 73 when he carries Marius through the sewers, which would be like 90 in our years.
Wow.
So he said, when you're carrying a tenor on your back through a weight of you know what in the sewer, the 73-year-old man can come out. So, you know, I'm carrying Nate on my back, and he's 140 some odd pounds. So, yeah, it is challenging, but it's also, you know, I try to look at what we do as athletes. You know, I have
very much so. Wow.
Well, you have to. You know, another a friend of ours who's been on this show and a friend of mine has headlined for me 3 times is Ramin Karimli. Mm. He's certainly enjoying his ultimate success now with that role.
Having a Tony nomination.
Yeah, having been doing various roles in the show in the West End. And he's another amazing guy.
Unbelievable. He really unbelievable is. Vocalist.
Lovely what is what was his Tony nomination for recently?
For Les Mis.
Jean Valjean.
Was for Les Mis. Yeah. Holy
it's
cow.
It's the new production of it, back from Broadway. It started in Toronto.
It's all mime.
Yeah.
Is that?
It's a mime production.
Les Mumenchants.
A little hard to hear.
Oh, boy. I don't think anyone here is old enough to remember Mumenchants.
I remember Mumenchants. Okay. I love them.
No, but I think this Sunday, of course, is the Tony Awards on June 8th, 8 o'clock on CBS, and I think there's a big number from Les Mis being done there.
I would imagine. Yeah.
Speaking of that, I'm going to put the information out about this production of Les Mis. This is currently running at La Mirada Theater for the Performing Arts. That is 14900 La Mirada Boulevard in La Mirada, California. It's a lot of La Miradas. Free ample lot parking. Ticket range $20 to $70. Unbelievable. Tickets, call 562-944-9801. That's 562-944-9801 or 714-994-6310. Or, of course, you can buy them online at La Mirada Theater. .com. Theater has the R-E spelling. LaMiradaTheater.com. Students, senior, group discounts. We will throw that information
out. Or you can just call Kathy Rigby at home. And she'll
call her at home. We have her phone number, Michael. Would you put it up there?
We do.
And we'll throw that information out a couple more times before the end of the hour.
James is working with two of our former, from this year actually, LA's Next Great Stage Star contestants, Kevin Semka. and Kimberly Hessler.
Who is, she's ridiculous. I mean, they're both amazing.
Yes, they are.
When Kimberly opened her mouth, I literally, my jaw dropped to the ground. Uh-huh. And I walked over to her and I said, "What are you doing?" She said, "What?" I said, "Go to New York." Yeah. She's like, "Well, no, I want to." I'm like, "Go to New York." I don't have to go to New York. She's brilliant.
Yeah, she is.
And Cameron's incredible, smart.
And who does she play? Who does she play?
Cosette.
Yeah.
And Cameron, yes, you know, he gave up. Has certainly had his experiences in musical theater, but his parents, you know, said, "If you want to go to college, it's going to pay for something that's going to be a backup." And he said, "Really?" And so he took business and did that.
You know, he just got Joe Hardy. He's going to be playing Joe Hardy.
Oh, he did. Did he?
Oh, great.
It's like the first three things he auditions for, he gets. You know?
Exactly, right. Yeah. Well, Julia Flores was all over him when he walked in because he didn't have an audition for that. And I set it up and I called Julia and said, "You got to see this boy."
There you go.
She called back and said, "Oh, so right for this show."
Michael, this LA's Next Great Stage Stars thing that he does, it's just, but now that it's been in existence for how long now?
8 years.
8 years. Yeah. These people are just popping up all over. They're popping up in the great regional productions.
Well, we've now had our 10th contestant make their Broadway debut, and I haven't made it yet. They're signing the contracts, and I cannot say the name of the contestant, but he's going into Book of Mormon. So
really?
Yeah.
You know, I was supposed to go into Book of Mormon.
Were you?
Did I tell you that? Yeah,
no,
I was.
You didn't.
Yeah.
What happened?
I had a conflict.
What was that, Paul?
I can't sing or dance. Oh, look at the time. Oh, stop it. My sides. I'm dying. Anyway, James, what are the you have such a varied career, such an extensive career, and I know it's a cheesy question, and it's one you probably get. Well, I didn't want to mention that.
Yeah, so, but it's all right. I'll talk like this.
It's okay. Just... like I said, it's cheesy, but I'm always curious. Favorite roles, best experiences, aside from Donnybrook, obviously, from Donnybrook.
Any role that Ted will do, I'm going to try to get. I get asked that question all the time. We had a talk back last night, and probably three or four people asked the same question of the entire cast.
Are the talkbacks common, or are they one night a
every
week?
Every Wednesday night.
Every Wednesday,
yeah,
okay. Because a lot of people like to go on those, so we should throw that out there,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, if you give me $1,000, I can get you in. Right. No, they're free.
Well, you do those private talkbacks at people's homes.
I do, yeah. Private talkbacks are $10,000. You get one song.
Right.
And
you'll talk about anything.
Yeah, I'll talk about anything. Right. I'll talk about the bonsai tree that you got. I become an aficionado. I just Google it. No, you know... I've been asked that question so many times, and I always say the one that is yet to be written, because for so many years I was replacing people. Like, I replaced guys that did shows. And then when I started creating them, even Carousel had been done before, you know? And I didn't originate. I replaced Michael Hayden. But I think in terms of just sheer – it's amazing. In terms of sheer show, Carousel was amazing. I also met my wife doing that on Broadway. But then Tale of Two Cities, because I was involved with that show since 2004, and just it was basically written on me. And now I'm doing this guy. So each has its own unique experience.
Right.
Certainly working with Sondheim and Assassins doing Leon Czolgosz, not only because of the history of it, because of Sondheim and Wyben, but because I got to sit when after we were done. How about a musical about killing a president? I mean, let's make a musical about it. Unfortunately, you know, the reality of that truth is there, so they decided to write a poignant piece about it. But when we were done with our scene, we actually sat on stage and watched the other actors. So every night, eight times a week, I'm watching Dennis O'Hare. I'm watching Michael Service. I'm watching Becky M. Baker. It's clinics in acting.
Yeah.
So that for that reason.
And I haven't seen Assassins. Is that common that it's done that way? That the other when it, is it usually staged that way that everyone is on stage? Is it just a directorial choice?
I don't know. You know, Joe Mantello, who's the brilliant director, also directed Wicked, directed it. Mm. And we had one set. It was an old broken down carnival, like roller coaster underneath a roller coaster. It looked like. And he just chose to do that. I mean, there were times when we did leave stage, but we basically sat in stalls. There were like, you know, shoot 'em stalls. You know, you have a little pop gun and you're supposed to knock down the guys.
Yeah.
Each one of those became stalls, and there was a chair in it with an uplight. And when we were finished, we went and we sat down in that.
Wow.
So I don't know how it's normally done. We were the first revival. They called it a revival. Mm. It was an off-Broadway production. And then we did the first production. We did it on Broadway, but... it was an incredible experience.
It's an intense experience, actually. Yeah. I saw it here in Los Angeles, but not a major production.
Right. Yeah, no, I know the music, but I've never seen a live performance.
And Neil Patrick Harris was our our guy who's now doing Hedwig and is nominated for a Tony. Wow. He's genius.
Did you see him do it?
I didn't see him do Hedwig. He's just genius as a performer.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But I mean, everybody's saying that he's just.
So this will be the first Tony Awards in a while that he's not, hosting, right?
Or I don't know. Is he hosting it?
I think he's hosting it.
Yeah, I think he is.
I'm so out of the
blue. His first. I think it's his first Tony Award now.
Because Hedwig is a limited run, isn't it? And just and you can't get a ticket to it. I mean, it's ridiculous. Isn't it a limited?
I'm not sure about.
I don't
that.
Know why I'm asking you. Like your hot tips.
Like I'm
or
working
something.
At the box office.
I just realized I'm just grilling you about your.
My phone were on. I could text him, but I can't have my phone on.
You can't have your phone on. Well, because if Ted keeps sending you those pictures,
I know exactly.
We don't really want that.
Do you think that seriously? Do you think that Neil has a chance to win the Tony?
I hope he does.
Based on his talent, not the fact that he's done so much for the Tony Awards and giving him a facelift as a host and being funny.
If I'm being politically correct, if I'm being politically incorrect, I oftentimes don't think it has to do with the performance. I think it has to do a lot with... Look, remember when Johnny Depp won he got an Academy Award nomination or something like that, but it was for Pirates, but he had done all of these amazing other things.
Yeah, right, right.
So... regardless, I think Neil's performances are always quite genius, specifically this with what he's had to do and the role he's taken on. So for me, my vote goes to Neil just because I know who he is. I know the kind of work ethic that he puts in. And he's a dear friend. Mm-hmm. And as are most of the people, you know, it's like a very small community. But I hope he has a chance, and I hope he wins.
I don't want to jinx it or anything like this, but I personally, this is how I feel.
Okay.
I'm not a gambling man, but I would bet the house on him taking that Tony home.
Yeah,
I would because I just think that it's a collective.
Yeah.
It's a collective thing, but also just from what he is doing as Hedwig, have you seen the show?
Yes.
Yeah. It's a phenomenal role. Mm-hmm. It's everything. It's so much deeper than a lot of I don't want to say deeper than musical theater, because it's not a musical theater piece, it's a rock opera piece.
Yeah,
but it is rock firepower. It's what I think that's one of the most important musicals of the last 10-15 years, because it just is a game changer.
I don't think most people have seen it, though, but they should.
No, and they should. Well, it's off-putting subject matter, but that's the best stuff, It says it right in the title.
It makes people think, and that, to me, is what's important about art. I remember I did Saved in college, which is a controversial Edward Bond piece play, and people were walking out, and they weren't walking out because it was a bad piece. They were walking out because they were uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And not that I want to make an audience uncomfortable, but I think it's incumbent upon us as artists or as people in the arts to say, hey, let's think maybe a little differently. And if they can go out with a different perspective on life, whether or not they're conservative, liberal, whatever it is, but we can be open to all aspects of life, then maybe we can be more accepting in life and stop the infighting and the world fighting and all that kind of stuff. So I think you're right. It's being open to change.
I'm encountering the exact same thing right now. I'll keep it brief because it's not my interview, but I'm encountering the same thing right now with this short film that I wrote. It's called The Beating. It's about bullying, and it's about how far one is driven to protect their child. Yeah. And we don't comment on it. We don't hammer the theme over your head. We just say, look, here's a situation that exists, and here's how this one, in our case, very troubled person, how this person decided to deal with it.
Yeah.
And a lot of people can't handle it because they think it's sort of like that it all has to be wrapped up in this after-school special bow. And that's one of the joys of a short film, is that when your tale is over, your movie is over.
Now less than 200-pound guy, because I lost all this weight, guy sitting across from you was bullied. I was bullied massively when I was in elementary school.
As was I.
And people are like, you? Come on, you? I'm like, yeah. I was beat up. I was bullied. I got smacked. I got ridiculed. And I chose to deal with it differently. I just shut it down. And that maybe is how I ended up, performing or whatever it is. But it's a really horrid thing. And the question is why? Why are they doing it? Well, how do we protect the kids? But let's figure out why the other kids are doing it and try to help them.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's horrible.
That's exactly.
Anyway.
Right.
And Les Mis. Right.
Yeah. So, back to the music.
Let's do a musical about bullying. Oh, yeah. Bully, the musical.
With an exclamation point.
Bully. Yeah. Hello, bully for you.
Yeah. It's where Teddy Roosevelt just kicks the shit out of a bunch of high schoolers. You like that one?
With a stick.
I did.
That occurred to me. I tell you. Yeah. I don't know if that's sick or what. We should do our arts calendar and get back to this. I will kick it off, Michael, if that's okay with you.
Absolutely.
In this, Stranger Than Paradise meets Swingers World, a group of small-time wannabes spend their days hanging out at coffee shops, playing poker, and talking about women. Things get complicated, though, when Ditch, Eddie Jemison, who's from Ocean's 11, 12, 13, HBO's Hung in the Veronica Mars movie, loses his temper and sets a chain of events in motion that leads down a darkly comic road, testing the boundaries of their friendship along the way. This strange tug of war culminates in an unforgettable encounter with a mysterious woman looking for a way out. King of Herrings received the Audience Award for Best Narrative Feature at the New Orleans Film Festival and was named Best Louisiana Feature by Propaganda Media. At the Phoenix Film Festival, its co-directors took home the Dan Harkins Breakthrough Filmmaker Award. King of Herrings will make its West Coast debut this weekend, playing at Hollywood's Chinese Theater as part of the Dances with Films 17. That's Sunday, June 8th, 7:15 p.m. For tickets, visit danceswithfilms.com. And in a couple of weeks or a month or so, we're going to have Eddie Jemison on the show. He's a brilliant actor.
Yes, he is.
And I only saw the trailer for this. I'm hoping to attend this on Sunday, but it looks fantastic. I'm very excited about it. And Eddie is a great guy, too. Also, a friend we met through another friend on the show, Scott Lowell, who is actually going to Broadway in September to be in Elephant Man with Bradley Cooper.
Fantastic for Scott. He's a good actor.
Yeah.
He deserves that.
Very, very excited for both of them.
Chapman University, in association with Lexicat Artists, presents the wartime letters of American soldiers, sailors, Marines, and airmen and their loved ones at home, which are brought to life in a new play, If All the Sky Were Paper, by Andrew Carroll, and directed by John Bennett, with Andrew Carroll also narrating. If All the Sky Were Paper will feature Academy Award nominee Laura Dern, Kate Manzi and Blake Barris from Days of Our Lives, noted actors Gary Cole and Ken Howard, and select members of the U.S. Air Force and United States Marine Corps. Referred to as the great undiscovered literature, Arthur Carroll has collected more than 100,000 previously unpublished letters and now emails from every conflict in U.S. history. Don't miss this incredible drama of the human experience, inspired by the correspondence of those who caught up, in the American Revolution, Civil War, World Wars I and II, Korea, Vietnam, Desert Storm, Iraq, and Afghanistan. One performance only Monday, June 9th at 7:30 p.m. at the Kirk Douglas Theater in Culver City. To order tickets, go to brownpapertickets.com or call 1-800-838-3006. Tickets are $25, with a portion of ticket proceeds going toward United States Veterans Artist Alliance, the Soldiers Project, and the Wounded Warrior Project. The performance will be followed by a reception with the director, writer, and the actors.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I would really enjoy that. I believe that Tucker Smallwood, who is a guest on our show, works with one of these groups. I don't know if it's Wounded Warrior or Soldiers Project.
Probably.
But he's a very accomplished actor, Vietnam veteran, wrote a great book about it called Exit to Eden. And this sounds really interesting.
And Lexicat is the new company of Victoria Morris, who was formerly the head of the equity department at Kazarian Spencer Ruskin.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so she is off on her own doing these wonderful things.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
This is an original piece just created for this one thing?
No. I don't know. I don't think it's created for just this one thing.
It's a great title.
It's taken from a best-selling book.
Because I remember HBO used to do a thing called Letters from Home, and it was something similar. All right, let's continue here. Our next guest is an actor, director, and producer. Since studying music and theater in Chicago at Northwestern University, he's performed in TV, film, voiceover, and on stages up and down the West Coast. Regional LA theater appearances include performing at the California Shakespeare Theater, Hollywood Celebration Theater, great group with our friend Jamie Rudofsky, Theater Works, the Marin Shakespeare Company, the San Francisco Playhouse, and Theater Unleashed. He is currently directing Songs for a New World for the Hollywood Fringe Festival, which opens next week. But he's here today to talk about his work as a co-founder and co-volunteer producer of A Little New Music, LA's popular new musicals concert series. Please welcome Christopher Makish. Hello, Chris. Hello. Everyone's favorite Austrian, Christopher Magish.
You know, it's, I'm working on it, so.
Christopher, you were talking. We were talking in the green room about this, but if you would repeat it for the listeners, I'm sorry to make you repeat it, but sure. It was very, very interesting. The origin of how this started and what it is that people can expect when they go, because it's a very, very unique idea.
Cool. Yeah. Well, you know, I was having some conversations. It's about 2 years ago now. I've had a longstanding relationship with New Musicals Inc., which is known. A bit more widely here in LA by the name of their school, Academy for New Musical Theater in North Hollywood, which is an entity that works on the development of new musicals. And we talked about how here, at least in LA, it's been a little bit of an insular community. And I mean, certainly you see out in New York, there's programs of the type that we're doing that's a great opportunity to bring together the LA theater community and have folks get a chance to experience some of the latest and greatest musical theater material that's out there, keep their finger on the pulse, but more importantly, get a chance to do it in an entertaining sort of setting. I mean, there's tons of new works that you see here, and there's plenty of workshops. There's plenty of opportunities to fill out comment cards and participate in the process of pushing these works along.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how would you? No,
right?
Just
yeah, I mean,
it.
And as we know, I mean, new work is a bell curve, and you know. We wanted an opportunity to bring together this community and curate sort of a fast-paced evening of standalone songs that maybe some of them are from book musicals, some of them are from writers who are who've written a great new standalone song.
Okay, so it's not like one new musical is presented.
No,
it's different. Okay,
no,
right.
it's a great variety of about 14 to 15 songs. You know, we're certainly open to a wide spectrum of musical styles. I mean, in many ways, in taking in these submissions that we get from writers and curating an evening, I mean, a broader sort of meta question for us as producers.
And may
is
I interject a question
sure.
right on
yeah.
what you just said? The submissions, how do they get to you? How do they know about this?
Or,
and
sure.
do you solicit things?
Both, you know, yeah. both. I mean, we started about a year ago. We have our concert, our fifth concert next Tuesday, and it marks about a year of concerts at Rockwell Table and Stage. And, of course, you know, the first time, you know, we were just, you know, reaching out to folks, some, you know, that we know within our communities to different writers. And I think we probably got something like, I don't know, 30 songs submitted at the time. And now folks are just finding us, you know, the word gets out. And I mean, we get at least double that now.
Well, you have an amazing team of people that you work with, also in a volunteer position of putting this on, I am assuming, right?
Right. Yeah. There's about 9 of us now. Mm-hmm. I mean, and we're all volunteer producers. We're doing this for the pure passion of wanting to bring these new works to audiences. So it's a group of folks with a number of different you know talents, everything from social media to publicity, videography. I mean, everything. We're trying to find opportunities to interact with our audience in every way we can.
Do the musicals have to be completed works when these songs are submitted, or can people just say, "I have these songs from a musical, and here's the synopsis"? Like, do they have to provide a synopsis of the musical that it's from, or do they just submit songs?
No, we ask for a bunch of context. Actually,
okay.
I mean, and we're open minded, but I mean, it's usually pretty clear to discern what standalone songs are kind of ready for prime time. You know, even if maybe you know they've submitted a great 11 o'clock number from the show that is undergoing a fair amount of retooling or reworking.
The only reason I ask is because I've recently finished writing a musical that I was going to submit just like. Just to
really?
Work. Yes. Yeah. Would you like to know the title?
Right. What's the title?
Yeah, it's called James Barber's Bonsai Tree.
I thought it was Bully the Musical.
That's the other one.
Just add an exclamation point. You're pretty good to go.
Good Lord.
And Peter Rockwell Welkin. Table. And, I'm sorry.
Peter Welkin, who's a mutual
yes.
friend of Chris and mine's, and talk about great minds. This guy, you know, is so analytical about everything, and he's such a hard worker, and he really delivers. And he's also a wonderful performer.
Absolutely.
On top of it. We
have a pretty multi-hyphenate group of producers. I think Peter Welkin's a great example of this, the sort of thoughtful approach. I mean, you know, this is not an open mic by any means. You know, we get in these submissions and we talk pretty extensively about the submissions that we get. We're aiming for you know, without being a 3-hour show, you know, aim for a nice bite-sized program that that has some balance, you know, and good flow to it and good variety as well.
And that's an interesting point that you bring up, especially in Southern California, is that you not only have to sell or present this piece of theater, but you also have to go against and convince people that the preconceptions that they have about what they're going to experience is not going to be that. It's not going to be a workshop. It's not going to be a 3-hour recital.
Right.
It's going to be a lean and mean. What is the usual running time of things like this? Like how many songs?
More like an hour and change usually.
See, that's perfect.
Yeah. It's usually perfect. About 14 to 15 songs. We usually have a funny host to kind of, you know, guide us through the evening. In this case, our program on Tuesday is being hosted by husband and wife team, Eric Peterson and Lisa Morabito.
Oh, wow.
If Eric Peterson, you may know right now, is currently on TV's Kirstie and was in the Broadway national tour of Shrek the Musical.
Right.
And his wife, I know, was in the Vegas production of Mamma Mia. And they're going to be a lot of fun. We're excited.
No.
They won't just be hosting. They'll throw out a couple of new tunes that we had submitted as well.
And you got two hosts, so you have that whole interaction thing.
It's a lovely environment over there at Rockwell and Table.
Yeah, no, yeah, he was telling me about it earlier. I want to put the information out there. I don't have the address, but it doesn't matter because we've got a website that has it all. This is A Little New Music, and it will be June 10th, as Michael said, Rockwell Table and Stage. And for more information, visit alittlenewmusic.org. We'll throw it once again like the other show that we have here, Les Mis. We'll throw this information out again before the end of the hour.
And, you know, we, with LA's Next Great Stage Star for the first time this year, actually pulled from your...
Is there a person doing a show in Southern California who isn't involved in the LA's Next Great Stage Tour?
I was so impressed when I went to, I don't think it was the first one, but I think I came to the second.
Okay, maybe it was our September show.
Yeah, and I was so impressed by what they had to do that I said to Peter Welkin, who associate produces Stage Star with me,
right.
I said, I think we should bring this into Stage Star and make it a challenge because it goes for 6 weeks of competition. Every week is a different musical challenge. And this 1 week, we gave it all new music. So
that's right. I remember that during the last one.
It was a very different week, and these kids had to learn these songs from the act. They had the assistance, in many cases from the writers and so forth, and be shepherded along in the process because they also didn't know the show, or the background about the show. So that was a big learning curve for them that week. But we kind of that's part of what
that
the competition is about.
That to me would be more interesting as an audience member than to see them do established work, because I think that would be more revealing, not only as an audience member, but more revealing to who they were as performers, because they couldn't, they couldn't pilfer from anything that had happened before.
True.
And I think that's part of the excitement for, any performer working on new work. I'm sure James can attest to that, too, is getting a chance to put sort of an original stamp on something, not having a preconceived idea of, of what this character is. And
right. And playing to an audience that doesn't have that either.
Exactly. Yeah. There's a lot of freedom. There's also a lot of responsibility. And I think for our performers, we're so grateful for the folks that we bring on board, which is, has been a mix of, folks with, substantial Broadway credits as well as some premier LA folks. But, they're taking on a challenge for us. We're offering them, a new song that they haven't touched before and saying, let's get this polished, because unlike some other programs that you might see out in New York, there's no music stands or anything like that. This is 100% memorized work. So we're asking folks to...
Another stigma you're up against. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. We want these to be really... We want that audience connection. We don't want folks, peering down at lyrics.
And how long have you done it?
This concert coming up on Tuesday will mark about a year.
About a year. So too early for any of these works from previous ones to have or have some seen come to fruition as full out musicals. Have you seen that happen with any of the work yet?
Not
I know it's
yet.
Only a year, so it's
right.
Unfair.
Yeah, we know that the musical theater development timeline can be span over
can
years.
Be decades, yeah, exactly.
Right.
Exactly. I was just curious about that. Would be a fascinating journey, I would imagine, to see, one of those things early on and then see it fully realized.
Oh, well, we're certainly hoping for that.
Yeah.
Sure. And it's interesting, of course, because you also have to catch this material at a certain part of the process, because once you start getting into that that place where where a show is sort of prepping for the the out of New York tryouts and all that, the writing and the producing teams get a sort of a tighter lock on the material. They're a little bit less maybe willing to put it out there.
Right.
It's interesting how But I mean, it works these days.
It sounds like the perfect thing for potential producers to attend, because you get to see things with absolutely no risk, you know, very, very early on, before the pie, as it always is, broken up into a million pieces before, you know, to see something that early on would be, I imagine that they're in the audience.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, I mean, there's a big community aspect to community building aspect to this program that we have. And it really was the heart of the idea of this is let's become a quarterly venue for folks to come together. And I mean, I love hearing stories from colleagues that I have, you know, about the sort of conversations that happen in those 20, 30 minutes after the concert where people are standing around kind of buzzing, meeting each other or rekindling, you know, older professional relationships. I mean, I've even had a couple colleagues who've gotten other, you know, subsequent projects out of that, which is a nice feeling, you know, to help foster work for other folks.
Have you performed in past ones? Or
it's an interesting question. I haven't. Me and some of my fellow producers will be doing some backup vocals for a song actually on Tuesday, which is the first time. But it was important to me to just sort of keep my producer hat on with this for a while, and also not make it like, you know, this is the Chris Makis show, you know, by any means. I mean, ultimately, we're very focused on, you know, curating an evening and then casting what we think will be the best people for that song. So a lot of times, you know, my self-interest get a little lost in the shuffle because I'm thinking about it. These two or three people, let's consider these folks, you know.
And how do you do that? Do anybody submit themselves to you? Do people do that as a performer?
As performers, yeah, it's a mix. And certainly, you know, the more that we're getting, you know, known as the word is getting out about us, we will get submissions from folks who will email us, you know, some info about themselves. And, you know, and we do seek to we seek variety from concert to concert. You know, we're not generally using the same stable of 12 performers every single time. You know, we are searching for variety. So, I mean, certainly, you know, there are going to be folks that we will pursue directly. Right. You know, a lot of times we give a first ask to the writers when we let them know that we'd like to select their song. Certainly, if they have, you know, somebody that they're in mind with it. And certainly if they want to bring in a Broadway singer to do their song, we're very happy about that too. Yeah.
So you mean like if James Barber wanted to go over and sing a song?
Certainly.
What a beautiful segue that is. Because if James Barber would like to sing a song, we have a song of James Barber
exactly
that we can play before we get to the final home stretch of what we're talking about here when we talk to our guests about the usual thing that we end the show with, which is an embarrassing moment. But I would love to play that. This is certainly something bringing him home.
Everybody needs to calm themselves down right now and take a listen to this man's spectacular vocal on this.
Before we get to that, I just want to throw this information out there very quickly, one more time. Christopher was talking about A Little New Music. This is playing on June 10th at Rockwell Table and Stage. And for more information, alittlenewmusic.org. And James, although this recording is from the production that we're seeing.
No, it's from my CD,
From James Barber's CD. But he is performing in Les Mis at La Mirada Theater. And that's lamiradatheater.com. Theater has the R-E spelling. Let's give this a listen. James Barber, Bring Him Home. In my knee.
days like the sun I might have known. If God had granted me a son, the summers die one by one. How soon they fly on and on. And I am old and will be gone. Bring him.
That's really stunning.
It is. And we'll hear the rest of that at the end of the show because we have to hear the rest of it.
We'll
right?
play the rest of
yeah.
it. Yeah.
We'll
You're going to ask me to do this technical stuff where I got to fade up and all that.
That's right.
Don't lose me in the jargon,
That's
Michael.
Right.
Don't lose me in the jargon.
Beautiful
instrumentation and really enjoyable. Really enjoyable. What's the name of the CD, James?
It's called Bring Me Giants. I developed it. Bring Me Giants is a quote from Cyrano de Bergerac. And Frank Walhorn wrote a Cyrano, which has yet to be seen on Broadway. And so what I did was I coupled with an educational not-for-profit called the Winer Newsom Foundation. And I took all the great characters of literature, put them onto a CD, Bring Me Giants, the title track. And that CD and curriculum go free to 10,000 high schools across the country. You can go to bringmegiants.org and we videotape Frank Wildhorn, the late Mitch Lee, who wrote Impossible Dream, myself. And it's an educational thing as well as a commercial thing. So the idea was the commercial CD, Bring Me Giants, is there. And then We have a show.
That's really great. Remind me. I won't trifle with mortals. So I won't trifle with men. Bring me giants.
Bring me giants. Bring me fire. Bring me giants.
Okay. I have a personal affection for Cyrano. I know you're saying Kels the Priest, but I've always enjoyed Cyrano. Okay,
so
it's that time, gents.
Yeah.
It is that time. We ask you to share a mishap, an embarrassment, something that went wrong out on the boards. Christopher, we could start with you if you want.
Well, mine's not from professional theater, but I have a high school production story.
Those are the best.
Right. In my senior year of high school, I was playing Tony in West Side Story, and at that pivotal moment at the end where he gets shot, the actor playing Chino had a gun malfunction, and rather than trying to try the gun again, he just screamed out bang. And so I had to take a bullet to the back in the form of bang.
With bang, yes.
Yeah,
the Batman bullet.
Exactly.
Yes.
But much credit to my friend Marie, who was playing Maria, even though the audience sort of stirred a little bit, she was a very committed 17-year-old actor, and she pulled the room back together right on the same page.
Really?
So did the audience laugh when that happened?
Well, come on,
yeah.
She demanded that they reengage themselves with the drama of the moment, and they did.
Well, was that her being a generous actress, or was that her being I'm not losing my scene because they laughed before it?
She's a good friend. I will attest it. It was
okay.
Her being generous.
Oh, good.
That's
good.
Work.
Okay. James, you're out.
Oh, man, I got a ton of them. But I'm going to go on the exact same thing that you did since you mentioned it. You know, in Les Mis, there's a scene where Javert and Valjean are at the end, and he says to Javert, you're wrong. You've always been wrong. You're free. Go. And he takes the gun, and he shoots it in the air. And he goes, bam! And he goes, go! Opening night, click, click, click. Oh. Last night, click. Three nights, the gun has malfunctioned.
Oh, no.
So much so that now, and we have it fixed finally, but it embarrassing moment because it's this poignant moment in this really wonderful spot, but we've got sound effects, we've got a backup. But one of our crew girls, amazing crew at La Mirada, has a T-shirt and it says bang on it. So she's sitting off in the wings and I click the gun, she goes, opens her shirt. So similar story. And then I've got to go sing Bring Him Home.
That is a commitment.
Yeah.
That is a committed yeah. crew.
Exactly. My goodness. Oh. Well, what a pleasure it's been.
Great
both
pleasure,
of
gentlemen.
Thanks for having us. A lot of fun.
Once again, we'll just throw the websites out and people can learn about what we're talking about. James is in Les Mis at La Mirada. That's lamiradatheater.com. Theater has the RE spelling. And Christopher was talking about A Little New Music, which he is a producer on. And that is alittlenewmusic.org, as well as.
Absolutely. Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, which is over at the Pantages Theater, my favorite theater in Hollywood. What a beautiful place that is.
Great Martini across the street.
You would know that.
I do, right across the street. That hotel bar pours a Great Martini.
Yeah, the W Hotel over there. And the show is playing through the 22nd of June, 3 weeks only. It just opened last night and was an amazing opening. And it's Andy Blankenbuehler is the director and choreographer.
You just made
show.
Up that name.
No, but it's hard to say.
It is. You've pulled it off very well.
And he has totally refreshed this show. It is quite a spectacle at this point. Very different than what I remember seeing on Broadway.
Oh, good.
Actually, because you and I did it with Andy Gibb for 6 months.
That's right. That's right. Yes.
Broadway.
We're going to let James.
See that.
I'm sorry, Michael. I didn't mean to interrupt you. We're going to let James play us off the air
yes,
with the
indeed.
Final piece of Bring Him Home. Gentlemen, a pleasure having both
Thank
of you,
James.
You on.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Chris.
And Michael, we'll see you next week.
Thank you on the radio.
If I die, let me die. Let him live. Bring him home. Bring him home.
Listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.